What is up, guys, and welcome to the Meeple Minded Podcast. My name is Jason.
And I'm James.
And we are doing this for the third time.
Yes, because somebody didn't press record.
Wow. Yeah, I've... what an idiot.
Yeah. Yes, yes, you are. And that's all you. You have the board in front of you.
I do indeed. Yeah, what an absolute idiot. Well, basically, yeah, we were recording and we paused
recording.
To check one particular thing and some absolute bumbling idiot didn't press the button to come off of pause.
Yes, so we had a nice half an hour long conversation with each other.
Exactly. It was very nice talking to you, Jason.
It's nice talking to you, Jason, but I'm sure everybody else wants to hear what we were talking about.
Oh, this is very true. Anyway, this is a tabletop gaming podcast about tabletop games, believe it or not. So, along with Paul in the newsroom later, who will be bringing you this week's weekly news and crowdfunding campaigns, we are here to talk about Azul. So, I think let's just skip the pleasantries and jump straight back into this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, here we go. What is Azul? Azul is an abstract tile drafting game for 2 to 4 players aged 8 and up with an approximate playtime of about 30 to 45 minutes and was released by Plan B Games in 2017. In Azul, players select from a pool of tiles split into several groups and place their selected tiles onto their personal board for scoring. At the end of the drafting phase, players that have full lines in the tiling preparation area then add the color tile to the scoring section, and as players do so, they gain points based on any chains they have created. After scoring for the round, new tiles are placed again into those workshop areas and another draft occurs. This is repeated until one player has completed a full row of tiles and scored on their personal board. Once the final round has finished, players have one final chance to gain those extra points by seeing if they have completed any of the bonus objectives. After final scoring, the winner is the one who has the most points. That is a rough idea of what Azul is about and how to play it. So let's find out what comes in the box when you buy Azul.
Okay, so contained within the box, you will get 100 resin tiles, 4 player boards, 9 factory tiles, 4 scoring markers, 1 starting player marker, 1 linen bag, and 1 rulebook.
Nice, nice. So a nice small amount of components in the box here. And this game costs around the £35 mark, so I wouldn't be expecting quite a lot of stuff. But to have some resin in there, that's impressive.
Yes.
So let's talk about the quality of said components. What's your opinions on those?
Overall, I think the quality is good, but your copy here is not that old, and there is one particular area which I'm a little disappointed in, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. The tiles themselves are, I can't fault them. They're really nice tiles.
Yeah.
It's the player boards.
Yes,
the player boards.
Yeah, you picked up on that as well, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the player boards, while they are fairly thick, I mean, they're standard thick punch board, and they're not too big, so it's not the size that causes this issue. But what I've actually noticed is my copy has started to warp, and some of them have started to bow. Now, one thing that we'll discuss later on really does make this problem a fairly big problem, because obviously it's where your resin tiles have to go. And where it's starting to bow and warp, it makes those tiles slide. But again, we'll touch on that a little bit more later.
Indeed. So overall, quality's good, but the punch boards really were a bit of a letdown. Because when I first opened this, I thought I would have given this a really good score on quality. But yeah, those player boards are...
Yeah, a little bit suspect.
It's not good.
No, that's a bit of a shame. Because, you know, the focal point in this game are those tiles.
Yeah.
They are fantastic. And, you know, the game knows that they are the focal part and it's represented, which is really good. They are of really decent weight. They're not too heavy. They're not too light. And it took me so long to actually realize that they were indeed resin and not ceramic, you know, porcelain and that kind of stuff. And that is so impressive for me. Like the fact that it was resin and it wasn't what it was, you know, trying to replicate.
Mm.
So, yeah, Very impressed with that. But yeah, let's talk about the game boards a little bit, because one, before all of the warping and bowing aspects that I now have to deal with, I'd already thought to myself that, do you know what? I'd rather pay a little bit more and have dual layer boards so that when those tiles go down on there, they're slotted in place, they're never going to move. And it just screams quality.
Yeah.
And I think this game would really benefit from that.
Yes, it would. The slightest knock of the table, as you said, even before the bowing issues, the slightest knock of the table, and it has happened a couple of times. We've played it, yeah, and those tiles, they just go everywhere.
Yeah, they do. And then it's trying to remember where they are. You know, any sort of people that aren't particularly honest, they might put them back in places that will benefit them a bit more at the end of the round for scoring, that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's minor things. I just think it could have been a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think it shows, because I'm going to guess they've done this off of player feedback in general, but you can now buy an add-on pack that effectively turns the board into a double layer board with the slots to stop the tiles from going everywhere around. But it's a bit of a shame they've had to go that route and that kind of thing wasn't picked up before.
Yeah, and play testing and stuff like that. Yeah, I do agree. I do agree. Especially because it would have been cheaper to do it at manufacturing, just to, you know, double it up on the boards themselves, rather than then coming out with an additional box that has an overlay that goes over the top. It's very...
Yeah. The fact that that's come as an afterthought is a bit... Yeah.
But hey-ho, you know, these things happen. One final niggle for me, really, when it comes to the quality. And it's not really a quality issue, but considering the effort that they've gone through to make the tiles look like Portuguese tiles, you know, to the theme, the board, even though it is an abstract game, was the inclusion of the really rather bland, boring, uninspiring black cube in order to track your score. I'm not sure how they could have made that better or how they could have themed it in any way, but it's just kind of a bit of a detracting thing from the rest of the theme and the rest of the appearance of the game, because it's a lovely, good-looking, bright and vibrant game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. As they've gone through the effort of theming almost everything, other aspect of this game, right down to the linen bag you put the tiles in, has a really nice pattern that mirrors the rest of the board, and yeah, just that'll be, it's you've gone through the effort of theming everything else. I mean, I like you said, I can't really off the top of my head think of what you could have done, but or at least put one of the tile patterns on it.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, or maybe a little bit bigger with the tile patterns. Yeah. Something like that. But anyway, yeah, that's the components. Let's talk about the gameplay.
Indeed.
Because that's what it's all about. It's a game. Azul is a pure drafting game. Nothing more, nothing less. And is really good at what it does. Drafting can be a bit sort of boring in some games. It can take way too long. In this game, it's nice and simple. Pick the color you want, take all the colors from that tile, done. Next player.
Yep.
I love that. It's nice and quick. There's no sort of... All right, there's a bit of analysis paralysis that can occur in this game, because it's like, well, I want that one, but, you know, I can see that James is next and I can see he's going to need that. And if he gets that, he's going to get X amount of points, whereas I'm only going to, you know, I might lose one. So do you know what? To stop James from getting X points, I'm going to take them instead.
Yes. And there is a slight bit of strategic thinking in the draft as well. As Jason says, you take all the colours from one factory tile. The rest of the tiles that were on that tile then get pushed into the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can take items from the middle. But if you are the first person to do so, you must take the dreaded first player marker.
Indeed.
Which then goes on the bottom of your player board, which is your minus track.
Exactly. And as he said, it is indeed a track. And if you fill that track, it's minus 14 points.
It is indeed, which in this game is a lot.
Yeah. And how else do you add to that minus track, James?
The tiles that you've drafted then go into your tile preparation area. And this tile preparation area, it's in rows, and it starts at one, and then it's two, three, up to five. You can only put one type of tile in each row. So if you take your four row, for example, and you put the red tile in there, until it is full and you've tiled, only reds can go there. So it becomes difficult because you start blocking off your tile preparation area. So if someone has been strategic and left a large amount of one color eventually someone has to take it.
Yeah.
And if you, ideally you want to push that onto someone who's filled up their 5 and 4 column, mm-hmm. because that will bring them some pain.
Exactly. Because once the row that they're putting it in, because you can only place in one row at a time, once that row is full, anything extra that you have goes straight into that minus track.
Yeah.
As wasted supplies.
Yes.
So even the minus track has theme in this game.
And this goes back to what we were saying about everything having a theme. It's like that minus track is smashed dials.
Yes. So, I mean, that's really nice. Like I said, the theme is, it's an abstract game, doesn't particularly need a theme. It's not like it's super strong with the theme or integral to the game. We've joked about this in the past that you could replace the Portuguese tiles with a burger making game or... Yeah. Just a standard roof tile in the UK. It's like, oh, yeah. Look, they all look the same.
Or not even have a theme. It could just be different colour tiles with no theme, yeah. and a couple of tracks. The game would be exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, while the theme is rather unimportant, they have done a really good job with that drafting mechanism, making it super quick for all players.
I do kind of like the theme, if I'm completely honest, because, as I said, you could remove the theme completely. The game wouldn't change at all.
No.
But I kind of like the fact that it's giving you a purpose for what you're doing rather than just being, here's a game, play it.
Yeah, exactly. And it is very visually appealing as well. We were playing it at our local game store very recently, and when someone walked past the table, they actually commented and went, oh, they look like Portuguese tiles. So it's like, well, there you go. They've nailed the theme, evidently, because someone who didn't know what the game was immediately figured out what it was.
Yeah.
So great. The game does sound like a lot of it just happens on your own personal board. However, there is that element of player interaction during the draft. As we've already touched upon, the interaction comes between watching other people's boards. What do they need? How can I stop them? How are they going to stop me? And that kind of stuff. So it's not just your own game going on.
Yep.
So yeah, that's a little bit about the gameplay. How about we just go straight to our final thoughts and say what we like, what we dislike, who this game is for. Over to you.
Okay, final thoughts. This game suits both new blood and veterans. The veterans, I think, will really enjoy the strategic element of this game. And the newbies, it's great as a gateway game to get new blood into the hobby because it's so easy to teach. I love this game. Gameplay wise, I'm quite disappointed with those player boards. I'm not gonna hide that. That was a real disappointment to find out that they are warping already. So, spoiler, the game will be losing some points for that.
Well, we will get on to the meeple rating in a minute, James. Because my final thoughts are, again, they're going to be pretty much echoed from you, because we are very similar in our opinions on these games. But yeah, Azul is a great introductory game. It's one of the games that I always break out with new players that isn't Ticket to Ride, that isn't Pandemic. I actually class this game as easier than both of those games. I think it is far more lightweight than both of those games. And while it is that lightweight, it is also really fun and engaging for veteran players. I love this game. I really, really do. It's not my highest ranked game because, like I said, it doesn't fulfill all of my desires when it comes to games, but it provides a nice variety. It has good replayability, despite the fact that I stick to the same plan of action every single game. I don't feel bored with it yet. The fact that I've played different variants of this game now with the stained glass, I'm going to be getting the Summer Pavilion one soon. Really looking forward to the fourth installment coming out as well. I'm really disappointed at the fact that they decided to release overlays as an expansion.
Yeah.
I like pimping my games. I really do. I go to third parties and pimp all of my games pretty much. But there's just something I find that I'm objecting to buying stuff from the company that makes the game, because it's just in my mind of, why didn't you do this to start?
Yeah, this should have been in the box from the get-go.
Yeah. So again, I shouldn't be feeling that way, because it's just them selling upgrade parts, if you like. But when it's the game developer, it is like saying, yeah, we should have done this in the first place, but hell, we're going to charge you the same price again for some overlays and maybe a little bit of an expansion in there as well. Yeah. A bit disappointed at that. I really do think they should have charged maybe an extra £5 or even £10 more to get dual layer boards in this game. It would have added so much to this game, an extra level of quality to just sort of take it to that next level. And if they had my rating would be very different, I think.
Yeah, I think mine would have too.
But yeah, as I said, the game is a collection keeper just purely because it is great for me to break out with new players. So it's going to be in the collection, as is Stained Glass, as is Summer Pavilion, and as is the Queen's Garden when that eventually comes out. So let's talk about our Meeple ratings for the third time this evening.
Indeed.
I have remembered to actually record this one, James, so no fear whatsoever.
Good.
But let's go for it. Let's hear your Meeple rating. Right. What do you like? Yeah, what's prompted your rating as it is?
I'm going to go for a 7 for Azul. And I want to state clearly, it's not the gameplay that's at fault. All my points off are quality. Mm-hmm. It's your copy is not that old. The board should not be bowing that quickly.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me. And the fact that you have to buy an upgrade pack to stop the tiles from sliding over. Those are two big ones. So it's losing points for those. But the rest of it's made up by for the fact that it is a fun and engaging game. I really enjoy the gameplay of it. And the fact that it's got other versions, and having played some of those other versions, the complexity level starts stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So this is a good intro. And it encourages you to go play the other ones.
It does, yeah.
So, yeah, a solid 7.
Good. Well, I will come in and say the quality on this is actually really, really good, excluding those player boards. I wouldn't say that they were bad quality. I just feel that when they were being manufactured, maybe they didn't seal them properly, which has allowed moisture to get in. You know, we're in the UK. It's not our atmosphere or our environment that we're in that does this. I know in certain hot countries it can be an issue. I know in certain damp countries it's a bit of an issue as well. But we've got the best of both really here. So it's not that. I just think a little bit more quality control is required for these games. So much so that the fake copy of this that we talked about a few months ago now, I'd be interested to see whether the boards had lasted better on that.
Yeah, that would be embarrassing. That would.
But unfortunately, I don't have that copy.
I was going to say, we burnt that copy. After our research episode, it went in the bonfire. So unfortunately, we can't compare it.
Perhaps I should have kept it for a little while. Best of both worlds right there. So yeah, as you can imagine, I have deducted some points for that. I've also deducted a little bit of pointage for how lightweight the game is. I can't look past the fact that this is so lightweight. It's not up to my usual sort of desire. It doesn't fill all my desires when it comes to gaming, but that doesn't mean it's a bad game. It is still a collection keeper, and I'm coming in at the same as you. I'm coming in at a 7 out of 10 for this game. So yeah, that is Azul, guys. Is there what's your experiences out there with Azul? Have we got it wrong? We probably have, because as I said, we've recorded this 3 times. We've probably missed some bits that we've already talked about and forgotten that we've talked about it. But yeah, we'd love to hear you. Hit us up on any of our social medias, which will be in the description of this podcast. Anything else from you before we hand over to the man in the news shed?
No, I think I'm ready for some news.
Indeed. Poor guy. He's been waiting for ages for us to keep re-recording this. So, apologies to you, Paul, but over to you for this week's news.
Yo, Brian. I'm afraid this week we're going to have a frank discussion, so there's no messing about. Well, you see, Dementia UK has their Raise Your Game campaign this October, trying to raise money for all the nurses and the families of those suffering with dementia, by trying to get everyone to get all those neurons firing in our brains by playing some board games. Yeah, well, not just board games, I suppose. Anything like puzzles, crosswords, anything really that gets people using their brain a bit more. Well, yeah, we did start back in September with our game day, and what with the donations on the day, you know, the pound each from all the door entries, 10% of the games I sold, and donations already made on our Just Giving page, we're nearly at £150, chap. I know, it's good, isn't it? And yeah, you're right, we'll still be collecting at our next event on October the 17th. But if anyone can't make it and would still like to donate to this great cause, then they can via our Just Giving page, and the address is justgiving.co.uk/mid-sussex-meeples, and that's all one word. And anything gifted on there is also gift aided, so they get a little bit extra too. Yeah, I suppose you're right, really. It has been a bit serious today on an intro, hasn't it? I mean, we are supposed to be adding a little bit of comic relief, so what do you suggest? Really? Okay, just not too hard. I still have to read the news out. Ow! You enjoyed that a bit too much, didn't you? You little bugger. I'm gonna clock you in a minute. You better start running now. Wizards of the Coasts, Magic the Gathering, the massive trading card game, seems to be in a constant spoiler season, previewing card upon card from upcoming sets when the last felt like it dropped just a few weeks ago. Bit like Apple and iPhones, if you think about it. But don't expect 2022 to offer any players a breather. Three new events have been planned for January alone, setting the pace for another cramped year. In a September 28th news blog, publisher Wizards of the Coast posted dates for Innistrad Double Feature and the rescheduled Commander Parties, along with Commander Collection Black, all arriving on January 28th. That's a big day for local game stores and players who can safely gather for physical events, as the first two take advantage of big crowds. Innistrad Double Feature is a special edition draft booster containing cards both from the recently released Innistrad Midnight Hunt and the vampire-laden Innistrad Crimson Vow, due to swoop in on November the 19th. The half of this totally not-a-block set focused on werewolves scored higher in aesthetics than gameplay with us, but perhaps the inclusion of some bloodsuckers and ghosts in its companion will complete the spooky picture. Riffing on the pre-colour dive-in horror flicks of the early 20th century, Double Feature's card will be printed with a black and white treatment and comprise a fully playable draft set all on its own, meaning participating players can crack open booster packs and build a viable 40-card deck for limited format events from both halves of the latest visit to Innistrad. A preview event will hit certain local game stores a week before its January 21st release. Those not interested in moody competitive play can instead take part in Commander Parties, which starts the same weekend as Double Feature. Originally planned for Halloween weekend, the collaborative spin on the popular fan-made format lets a group of players affect an immersive story through the actions and outcomes of their matches. It's meant for casual players, so maybe keep the several hundred dollar tutors and Voltrons in the bag for this one. Split into factions at the beginning, a video guide will call for a certain resource, life, creatures, land cards, etc., and the faction with the most will advance along an accompanying game board, along with benefiting from nice in-game bonuses. Wizards hadn't said anything more about the story other than it's taking place on Innistrad, so expect a post-winter holiday injection of fright. Both of the in-store events will offer promotional art cards, Endless Ranks of the Dead for Double Feature, and Conjurer's Closet for attending Commander Parties. Newcomers to Magic the Gathering can use these themed events and set to familiarise themselves with the game at their local community. And it also shows some continued support from Wizards for bricks and mortar stores as they hurtle towards the second full year under pandemic conditions. Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, the first core set of next year, is still waiting for a release date, a bit more concrete than just Q1 2022. The return to a long-time favourite plane may also prove contentious for its embracing of cyberpunk aesthetics, a far cry from the card game's usual high fantasy look and a cultural phenomenon quickly succumbing to oversaturation. Do you fancy becoming a member of the Goonies squad in an escape room game inspired by the original film and created by the co-designers between Junk Art, Jay Cormier and Sen Fung Lim? Entitled The Goonies, Escape with One-Eyed Willy's Rich Stuff, a coded Chronicles game, the upcoming board game sees players solving puzzles and experiencing many of the iconic moments from the film it's based on. Players take the roles of Mikey, Brand, Mouth, Data, Andy, Steph, Chunk, and Sloth as they embark on an adventure to find the treasure of the aforementioned One-Eyed Willy. Along the way, the players will encounter many dangers and obstacles that they must overcome in order to reach the remains of the Inferno and claim their prize. Each of the different members of the Goonies have their own unique skill, which players will need to utilise at various points to progress the narrative. As every new clue is decoded, the players will gain the answers they need to get closer and closer to the hidden treasure. However, the players will also have to be aware of the Fratelli's gang and avoid being led astray by their antics. The escape room game will contain a narrative inspired by the Goonies film, with the players needing to work together to unlock locations and acquire new tools. Using a code-revealing mechanic, the players can discover the secrets they need to win the game, with no time constraints involved. Besides the Goonies Escape with One-Eyed Willy's Rich Stuff, a coded Chronicles game, and Junk Art, Cormier and Lim have previously worked together on titles such as Akatira, a board game about exploring ancient Grecian temples, and the D&D-themed game Dungeons & Dragons Rock Paper Wizard, which is a play on the classic playground game of Rock Paper Scissors. The Op is going to be the publisher responsible for releasing the Goonies Escape Room game, with this being the third entry in a series of escape room titles from the studio called Coded Chronicles, with the others being Scooby-Doo, Escape from the Haunted Mansion, and The Shining, Escape from Overlook Hotel. Otherwise, the company is best known for publishing the deck-building game Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle, and Thanos Rising, Avengers Infinity War. The Goonies itself is a 1985 adventure film about a group of kids who discover an old treasure map and attempt to find its fortune in order to save their homes from foreclosure. However, in their quest to retrieve the treasure, the group run afoul of a local crime family who also decide to seek out the treasure. Obviously, as a 1980s film, hijinks ensue. A release date for the Goonies Escape with One-Eyed Willy's Rich Stuff is set for November the 4th, with the title being priced at $29.99, which is about equivalent of £22. The Resident Evil 1 board game has been officially revealed with the first look teaser trailer, gameplay details, and the announcement of a Kickstarter launch date. Rumblings of a board game based on the 1996 PlayStation video game first arrived over the summer thanks to a flyer included with Kickstarter copies of Resident Evil 3 the board game, which teased a Kickstarter launch for this autumn. Publisher Steamforged Games have now fully revealed Resident Evil the board game as coming to Kickstarter on October the 26th, accompanied by an announcement trailer that briefly shows off the upcoming board game's map tiles, character cards, and miniatures. Most of the video's runtime is taken up by live-action footage that will be familiar to anyone who has explored Spencer Mansion in the survival horror classic. Steamforged provided a sliver of extra information about how the co-op board game will play in its press release, confirming that it will support up to 4 players, as well as include a single-player mode, and see players retrace the steps of STARS members Jill Valentine and Chris Redfield as they venture into through and ultimately below the zombie-infested mansion into a laboratory of the villainous Umbrella Corporation. Like the tabletop adaptation of Resident Evil 3, the Resident Evil 1 board game will feature a campaign mode that will be affected by players' choices during scenarios. The game is described as having an open-world exploration, offering a mixture of combat, puzzle-solving, and narrative events. Each scenario will last about 90 minutes, with no confirmation on how long the entire campaign is estimated to last. As well as Resident Evil 3, Stormforged has previously adapted Resident Evil 2 into a board game. Both titles were based on their original PlayStation versions, rather than modern remakes. The studio has also produced a number of board games based on video games too in recent years, from Dark Souls and Horizon Zero Dawn to Devil May Cry and Monster Hunter World. Pricing is yet to be announced for Resident Evil the board game, although Resident Evil 3 started at roughly £65 for the Kickstarter edition. A retail release is also yet to be confirmed, although both Resident Evil 2 and 3 board games later saw wider availability. And we're heading on over to crowdfunding now. All three of these are on Kickstarter now. Some are funded, some need your help. First up this week is Keep the Heroes Out by Lewis Brew. It's for 1 to 4 players, takes 40 to 120 minutes to play, is for 10 years and over, and the project ends on Tuesday, October the 19th. Keep the Heroes Out is an asymmetric, cooperative dungeon defense game for 1 to 4 players, where you play as the monsters protecting their hard-earned treasures against invading hordes of looters, or so-called heroes, trying to steal it. In their turn, players draw 5 cards and play. These cards allow them to move, activate the tile's actions, attack heroes, and move their units around. After each player, draw and perform cards from the hero deck. Your goal as a team in every scenario is to survive the 3 levels of threat from the invading heroes by protecting the treasures on each room. If the main treasure is taken, the game ends and you lose. But if you manage to protect the treasures for long enough, you will win. And with one pledge level, it's £37 or $50 gets you the game and all the unlocked stretch goals. Next up is Gods and Heroes by Dwarven Beard Games. It's for 1 to 2 players, takes 30 to 120 minutes to play, is for ages 14 years and over, and it ends on Friday, October the 22nd. Gods and Heroes is a fast-paced battle card game with drafting and in-game deck building for 2 players, although they have got 4-player rules which can be added via their stretch goals. Gods and Heroes is a battle of strength and prestige between warring gods and their subjects. You build temples of worship to bolster your armies and weaken your foes. Let loose your mightiest heroes and crush your enemies in the name of your chosen deity. Each player represents as a god or a goddess fighting for dominion over the Lost Realm. Players draw and play cards to attack the other temple guardians. Once all of a player's temple guardians are destroyed, a player will lose the game. Victory goes to the one who destroys all the enemy temple guardians. Alternatively, whoever cannot discard 3 cards during a reshuffle loses. To start off, you can pledge £8 or $10 for the print and play files. And the other ones get a bit confusing, with the following 4 pledges getting you an increasing choice of decks from those included in the project. So the pledge levels for the physical copies start from £23 or $30 for the base starter set, right on up to the complete set of all the decks available for £89 or $120. So head on over to the campaign for more information on what I'm on about. And lastly on crowdfunding this week is Beast by Studio Milhow, and this has been gathering quite a pace lately. It's for 2 to 4 players, it takes 60 to 120 minutes to play. It's for ages 14 years and over, and it ends on Thursday, October the 28th. Welcome to the Northern Expanse, a place where nature is still unexplored, mystical, and dangerous. When the humans first arrived, they thought they found an unspoiled paradise, filled with bountiful forests, lakes swimming with fish and cold fresh water flowing from the mountains. But as their settlements expanded and their surrounding forests grew thinner, nature itself pushed back. Great creatures known as beasts emerged, and with their fangs, claws and mystical powers, they proved an incredible threat to the humans. In order to protect the settlements, humans enlisted specialized hunters, tasked with tracking and killing the beasts before too many of their kin perished. The beast utilizes a hidden movement in the use of a deck of direction cards to move over forests, swamps, and caverns, using guile and deceit to hide its track from the hunters. However, when a hunter moves over a location where the beast has previously been, a trail appears. Only when a hunter searches a location or the beast itself attacks an unsuspecting target is the beast's actual position revealed. More so, each hunter has but one chance of searching each round, making it a tense and difficult decision. Hunters seldom have full information whether the trail they're pursuing contains the beast's actual location or if the trail has already gone cold. Each action you perform in the game is done by playing a card from your hand, up to a maximum of 2 cards per turn. This means that if a player wants to search, attack, or move, they need to have a card in their hand that actually lets them do it. Before each round, both hunters and beasts participate in a draft for the most important cards, as all action cards can be used by both the beast and the hunters alike. In order to win this game, you either need to cooperate every step of the way if you play as the hunter, or skillfully outmaneuver your opponents if you play as beast. On their own, hunters are never stronger than the beast, but only when they work together, communicate, strategize, and combine their actions can they bring down the beast before it's too late. The core game pledge comes in at £44 or $59, including all unlocked stretch goals and a limited edition art print. Or you can go all in for £63 or $85, which includes the game, stretch goals, print, as well as an art book, metal coins, and an additional 32% off of any additional add-ons you may want to purchase. And we're heading on over to events now, and it sounds like Surrey Board Gamers' first event this year went off with a bang. So congratulations to Abby for setting that up in their new digs. Alan and Dungeon Crawley have been given the all clear to start reusing the hall again, so we're just waiting on some dates for them. Stay tuned to their socials to hear any more information. October the 17th will be the next Mid-Sussex Meeples Day down here in Burgess Hill for your diaries. If the last was anything to go by, it should be a great turnout again. We look forward to seeing you all. Besides that, the weeklies are still up and running. Wednesday evenings is gaming at the Comic Shop in Crawley. Dave and Lewis Board Game Club are all over at the Trinity Gaming Cafe in Lewis on Thursdays. Mondays, as always, is Crawley Gaming Club over at the Tilgate Community Centre in Crawley. As always, check on social media accounts for all information and any last minute changes. And that's all from us this week. So, Brian, are you going to say goodbye to everyone? And from me, it's a goodbye. Keep safe, meeples. Keep those dice rolling, the cards shuffling, and we'll be right here for you next week. Right, Brian, where's that frying pan? Brian, come here.
Thank you very much for that, Paul, and thank you guys for joining us here on the Meeple Minded for our chat about Azul. And yeah, what an evening this has been. This has taken us far longer than it ever did.
Yeah.
My voice is starting to go. In fact, it started to go before we even started this, to be fair. But
yes, and we have triple checked that the record button has actually been pushed this time.
It has indeed. I'm not so sure that the mics aren't all on mute, but hey-ho, there's so many lights on this thing. Looks like a runway.
It's fine. I can hear you, therefore they're not muted.
But yeah. Thank you very much again for joining us, guys. It is always a pleasure doing this every single week. Sometimes you just sort of think, oh, do you know what? I am quite tired today. But then once I sit down and press the record button, I'm having a blast.
Yeah.
And, you know, to have it's an excuse to see my good mate as well when we're not playing games. I mean, granted, we're probably going to play a game in a minute as soon as we turn these off, but we would have played about four games this evening if I'd did this properly.
Good mate. Who's that? Are you recording with someone else?
Damn it, he's figured me out. But anyway, guys, we are going to head off. We're going to play some games. My name is Doing Jason.
And I've been James.
And you've been listening to the Meeple Minded podcast. Join us next week for more tabletop gaming goodness when I do press the record button. I will see you then. Bye-bye.